Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Dishing with Digest, now on Spotify, so listen on Spotify. I'm Stephanie Sloan, editorial director, here with Mara Levinsky, senior editor.
Hi, everyone.
Mara, we have some fun casting news over Days of Our Lives. Brandon Barash, who stepped in for Tyler Christopher to wrap up the Stefan Demare story, is back in potentially a new role. Now, Stefan was killed off last fall, and his heart went to Julie. And even though it's Days, I mean, I assume he's going to be playing a new part. Suffice it to say that the show will absolutely be addressing his resemblance to Stefan. And he will cross paths with Camila Bannis's Gabby, which should be certainly interesting for all of the Stabby fans.
Totally.
Brandon actually made a really fun video, complete with an original song announcing his return on the Duel app. And if you haven't seen it, it is definitely worth a download, as is the Duel app in general, which I have said many times here on the podcast. In other ins and outs in Salem, we'll also see the exits of Teo Penglis and Leanne Hunley, who will wrap up their visit as Tony and Anna, which, I mean, it's really too bad because, in my opinion, I love seeing these two on screen, and I think they bring so much to the canvas.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would disagree with that. Their Salem roots run so deep. They're both a real value add to the show. Now, last week, we talked about how Kelly Tebon, who had been airing as GH's Brit, was making her Salem debut as Zoe. And now this week we learned on screen that Britt's return trip to GH was rather short and that Britt got a better job offer in Boston and left Port Charles. Right? I mean, she's not going to be fun employed anytime soon. She got a better job offer in Boston and left Port Charles to go to join the staff of a hospital there. But I'm really sorry to see her go, especially before any like real story got going for Britt, because I really enjoy her on GH. But I know that the show values the character as well. And so I certainly think we could be seeing her again, hopefully sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I hope so too. Another casting tidbit from Days is that Remington Hoffman, who we saw on the Duel app as Lee Shin in the latest installment of Chad and Abby in Paris, is coming to the broadcast show in the same role. I mean, I think it's such a cool concept that they're pulling from the web series and using the character to move story in Salem. And I mean, I'm going to say it again, that app is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, I got to say, Remington Hoffman, that would be a great soap name if it wasn't taken by the actor. now, in the new issue of Digest, we also spoke with Crystal Khalil, who has been coming in and out of Genoa City as Lily for the last little while because Crystal relocated to Canada with her partner and her son. But she is back on YNR in a more sustained way, with what seems to be a big story on the horizon now that Lily and Billy are working together. And she tells us that she's thrilled to be back in the mix and that this move in a corporate direction is something she's always wanted for her character, to be like a boss lady and in a position of power. And I'm such a Lily fan, and I think she's such a key character to have on the canvas as a connective tissue, if you will, for the Winters family. And I'm thrilled for the show and for the fans that she has agreed to take on a bigger role.
You know, she also says that she's, you know, hoping to move to LA for the summer so she could do more episodes. And, you know, fingers crossed, the shows will be back filming by then. You know, I didn't realize how much I missed Lily until she came back in a more meaningful fashion like she has. And I think there's definitely like a lot more story to tell with her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mara, you and I both have such a deep connection to Another World. It's the first soap I covered here at the magazine. And I know you were a viewer before you started here. Today we're talking to Ricky Paul Golden, who played Dean Frame on the show. And I think it's fair to share that you and I both YouTubed Dean's songs, Lady Killer and Oh Jenna, last night.
And I think it's fair to share that A, we still know all the words to both of those like absolute bangers. And B, that while I am not a jealous person per se, I will never get over the fact that you were actually on the set of Another World the day that the Lady Killer video was taped. I'm actually glad we're not together right now because I would be unable to look you in the eye without shooting daggers.
That's amazing. I mean, it was definitely a memorable day there, I'm not going to lie. You know, they did a lot of special episodes back then. There was one that they did like with the Orient Express theme, and there was another one I can't remember, but it was definitely a great show to cover as the first show I covered here at the magazine for sure.
Well, I was such a huge fan of Dean and Jenna, and even just watching the few brief clips that I did last night, I totally remembered why. Dean's hairstyle and his shirts, by the way, they were just as epic as that romance was. That was another observation I had while on YouTube. But they were such a big deal, Dean and Jenna, that not only were they on the cover of Soap Opera Digest, which was a rare achievement for two young actors and their first soap roles, which Ricky.
Oh, and on Another World.
Yes,
like that really wasn't a show that we put on the cover a lot back then.
Right. And not because y'all didn't love it, but because it didn't have as like, you know, big of an audience. But Ricky and Ala Karat, who played Jenna, they were like both brand new and hit it so big in those roles. And they also did a whole location shoot for them where like the Lady Killer video played on the Jumbotron in Times Square. And we saw Dean and Jenna seeing them themselves like up on the big screen. Like, that was so amazing. And then Ricky, who's such a likable performer, ended up being a big hit on Guiding Light as Gus and then on All My Children as Jake as well. I remember so well going to lunch with him to interview him when he was making that jump from Guiding Light to All My Children. And he had a whole stack of research about Jake with him that covered like his relationship history, all the way to his food allergies, like literally Jake's food allergies. And Ricky was diving into them to prepare for the role. And he's also just one of the sweetest guys around. So I am so very excited to chat with him today.
Well, me too. And on that note, let's start chatting with him. Hi, Ricky.
Hello. Hello, guys. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
Oh, we are so excited to talk to you today. We've actually been discussing it all week, so we are
No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure or anything. First of all, how are you doing?
We're doing fine. I mean, you know, so many people are suffering. We have friends of friends, you know, people have lost people. It's insane. We're blessed. We went through a lot in 2019 with breast cancer with my wife, with Greta. And so she's still doing the ends of chemotherapy. They didn't want to continue doing the therapy sessions, if you can imagine, because everybody was taking in the corona cases, and it was insane. We had to get out of New York. Too many people coming in and out of our apartment building because she's immune compromised. So we came out to, we're about 10 minutes from Montauk, all the way out on the island, just like living like hermits out in a cottage out here and going into New York once a week to do the chemo. But, you know, the hardest part, I think, is the kids. You know, I read something on the internet yesterday that the real little heroes, I mean, all the first responders, all of that, of course. And then our little, what about our little heroes, the kids? You know, they're not used to this. And well, then why do I want to kill my little heroes in my house? You know?
I'm sure you're not alone.
Yeah. They're like bouncing off the walls. I'm doing everything I can. I'm trying to create things, you know, and I said this before, I said this to another friend of mine, you know, it's like you think of it, couldn't it be like a sweet movie of the week? Like, you know, I really got time here to bond with my family and the kids and play Monopoly and Canasta every night, but it's not like that. It's, you know, you are trying to communicate with people in the outside world, grandpa up in Boston and some of our friends on the West Coast, you know, and all that. And the kids need to be on their iPads. At least Kai, who's 9, does his school on the iPad. And then the little one has been watching Boss Baby about, 200 times. I know the whole script by heart. it's kind of the story. It's our story because I have an 8.5-year-old and a 2.5-year-old. So the 8.5-year-old is trying to negotiate with the 2.5. And anyway, you get it. You know, it's crazy.
Well, tell us how Greta's feeling.
She's amazing. You know, I told Stephanie knows me for a long time. I got slammed in the head with a frying pan the day I met Greta Monahan. It just took me out of circulation. She's the best person. Can I tell you something? Even with everything we went through last year with this breast cancer, which is a freaking nightmare, even when she'd cry in my arms, she'd laugh through the tears. Like, she found a way to be laughing when she's crying. And I've never met anybody like that. You know, actors, for the most part, we've got lighter sides and dark sides and all kind. You know, I don't know. Maybe that's why we're all like a band of gypsies. You guys too. We're all in this business, right? So we seem to band together. And I'm just was so lucky to meet somebody with an even temperament. She's like my heroine. She's my hero. And you know, she's just such an amazing beacon of light through this whole thing that we went through with cancer. You always think it's going to happen to somebody else and not your family. But I learned so much. I learned so much last year, and I learned so much from her, you know.
Mm-hmm. She's amazing. For anyone who's never met her, I can vouch for that. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we thought it would be fun, you know, while we're all at home, sort of being nostalgic, we're going to take a little look back in the life of Ricky Paul Golden. And we're going to start at the beginning. So you were born into something of a showbiz family. Your mom was an actress and your father was an entertainer and hypnotist. So how did your own love of performing come about?
My own love for it. Well, my mom and dad, when they got separated, I just started going on TV commercials and stuff when I was 7. I guess I just was like a precocious kid, and I'd come in and you want that attention. I think the bottom line is that, first of all, I got to tell you, it came out of necessity. When my parents broke up, we went from being really kind of well off to being completely broke. Me and my mom, I'm just going to be honest with you. We were living in a lady's house named Mrs. Lowen, who was a rich, rich lady, but a hoarder and a weird, you know. I don't know if Steph, I ever told you this, or Mara, but my mom was, she had no choice. She rented a bedroom in this woman's house. This woman had like 150 cats. I am not exaggerating. She was out of her mind, but she was a very nice person, a nice soul. My mom was renting a room for like $20 for a bedroom. One for me and $20 for herself. And we lived in that house for like 3 years. So when I say it came out of necessity, my mom started taking me into the city and trying out for TV commercials. And in the beginning, I remember I didn't get anything because I didn't know what I was doing. But I started to learn what they want from you as a kid. And so I started getting them. I know I was precocious. I was I guess that was the thing that started to work. And so I started to book these TV commercials, and that was really, I think they were bigger money back then, TV commercials, than they are now, but they were really big money for us, especially for us. We were completely broke. We had nothing. And I ended up getting really big commercials like Ruffles, potato chips. And I was the kid that said, "You sunk my battleship." I was the first kid that said that that commercial.
That's you. Oh my goodness. I am so much more impressed with you than I even was when we got on the phone.
God help you. So and then I did the commercial, like the little bunch of kids walking to the Museum of Natural History and looking up at the dinosaur and going, "Sure, glad I don't have to brush those teeth." Then I did the Time Magazine commercial with Brooke Shields, and I did the Time Magazine commercial together. So they started, and those things ran for like 3, 4, 5 years. I'm very lucky. Those commercials, I did over 150 commercials when I was a kid, and four of them, I think it was four of them or five, whatever, won Clio's, which is the only award you can win for commercials. And it wasn't because of me. It's just because they were kind of iconic commercials. And
that's amazing.
so that paid for stuff. Like we were able to get a little apartment and this and that. And I just kept going. My mom just kept on. My mom would take me to an audition and not stick around. She's like, she wasn't like, I have to be honest, not a stage mom, but I booked a lot of stuff. So she dropped me on the set and know that there were caregivers there and say, I'll just come back. I don't want to talk to him or distract him when he's doing whatever. And those roles just got a little bigger. When I was younger, there was movies of the week. And there were after school specials. My son is putting his face up against the glass door. Hi, Kai. Hi. Now beat it. I love you. Love you. So I started doing those after school specials and movies of the week. And then I got some sitcoms, you know. I got a year on Alf and a year on Kate and Allie and a year on 21 Jump Street. And since we were New Yorkers, I was in love. I did fall in love with the theater. I think to answer your original question, I don't remember falling in love with show business. I don't remember falling in love. I just think it was the only thing I knew how to do, you know, and it was an escape because it was an escape from just being alone with my mom. You know, I didn't have brothers and sisters. I've got brothers and sisters all over the world. My dad was a busy guy. He had six wives. Did I tell you that, wow. Steph?
I feel like, nice to meet you, Ricky.
I know, right? In fact, you won't believe that every year there's like a new sibling shows up. On my honor, on my kid's life, I just got a Facebook thingy-majiggy from a guy who lives in London. He goes, I just found out that Paul Golden is my dad, and that's your father, and that's my father. Hi, brother. I'm like, I'm so busy right now. I can't.
Oh my God. Is it like 23andMe stuff happening?
Yeah. He did a 23andMe or ancestry.com. And he's a lovely man from what I gather. And I'll get into that when the smoke clears and I'll meet him and whatever in Europe. But all kidding aside, there's like seven of us, seven children.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah. So, but for me and my mom, it was just us in the United States. And so by the time I was 16, I started to travel and shoot these little movies like in Ohio or Atlanta or whatever, LA. So then it was my thing. That's what I got. It was my own thing. And I didn't know how to do anything else. And that's when maybe it was my ticket out. So I really gravitated to it, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, one thing I'm so curious about is you made your Broadway debut when you were still a teenager, which is such an impressive feat. It was on Golden Pond. What stands out to you about that experience?
Well, that was a crazy time. You know, when I was 16, my mom and I, our little house had burned down, and we were on a little trip to Florida. And I'll be honest with you, my mom would drive this. Her job was to bring cars down to Florida, expensive cars. So they'd fly her down and then she would drive the car back up, whatever. It was a weird job. And she ended up working for BMW Road and Track magazine and stuff. So, but we were away, we came back and our little house had burned down in the middle of the night. And 5 days later, and that's the worst if anybody's ever been through that. And then about 5 days later, I had a little manager she wasn't little. I was little. I had a manager and she's like, maybe it'd be nice if Ricky had this audition, just get his mind off, everything. And my mom's like, sure. I went into New York. I'm like, I've got black soot on me because we've been digging through our house. I had a Miami t-shirt on because all of our clothes we only had what we took to Miami. And I went on the audition and, you know, I think it's because my head was so, it's a lot for a kid, I guess, to go through. And I got up on the stage and I did the audition and they said, we'd like your headshot. I'm like, I don't have any headshots. They all burned in a fire. Sorry.
Oh my God.
And then we read it about 3 weeks later, but you know, then everybody didn't have cell phones and stuff. We're just pay phones. And so we were in a coffee shop, Norman's Coffee Shop in Woodmere, Long Island. And my mom read in the Post that this was a Broadway audition about 3 weeks ago. And this boy walked in and he didn't have a headshot because It was burned up in a fire, and he did the audition for us. And his name is Ricky. And by the way, he got the part. We can't find him, but he got the part.
Wow.
That's crazy.
So we ran to the pay phone and, you know, I got to be on Broadway. I didn't even really know how big a deal Broadway was, to be honest with you, but pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool indeed.
Now, one of your first big TV roles was on the short-lived sitcom Hail to the Chief, playing the son of the first female U.S. president, played by Patty Duke. So what do you remember about working with her?
Wow. Well, I'm going to say a bunch of names from that show that nobody might know, or some real old, you know, television aficionados would know. But Ted Bessel was my dad. He played, I think he did a show called That Girl. He was the husband in that show. So Herschel Bernardi, who was a genius comic. Dick Shawn was a genius comic. He's the guy with the white hair who actually died on stage. He used to do a bit as a comic where every night he would fake having a heart attack on stage. And he'd fall to the floor to get a huge round of applause. And he was very, very funny. He was in that movie, It's a Wild, 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 Wild World, you know, or Mad, 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 Mad World. Look, I've got it wrong. Mad, 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 Mad World. Really funny. And then he actually died on stage having a heart attack in real life on stage.
That's crazy.
And so he was in it. Ted Bessel, Patty Duke, amazing people. That was all the same people that did amazing shows like Soap and Benson and all these things. But the show was very irreverent. I remember all these nuns were in the audience once. They would bust in anybody to fill up the audiences, and all the nuns walked out. I'm like, that's not a good sign. Or maybe it's a great sign. I don't know. But I got to meet so many great people from that. And it led, you know, one job usually led to the next job, because in our business, people are like, well, if those people took a gamble on this actor or this actress, then I can do the same thing and I'll feel safe by letting them be in my project. And that's usually how it went, especially for younger actors, you know, coming into their own, you know, at that age.
This podcast is brought to you by BetterHelp. We are in challenging times right now, and it's harder than ever to connect with the right therapist. Fortunately, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who are specialized in issues such as depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping trauma, and family conflicts. They work with 3,000 U.S. licensed therapists across all 50 states to connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions without having to leave your house, which is incredibly important right now. If you're not happy, you can change and ask to request a new counselor anytime. There's no delay and there's no charge for doing so, and anything you share is confidential. BetterHelp is a lot more affordable than traditional face-to-face counseling, but just as effective. I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/dishing. Join over 800,000 people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/dishing.
So you had been on like a whole lot of shows out in LA, from St. Elsewhere to Elf to Kate and Ally. How did you end up making your way back to New York and to your first soap role, the one, the only Dean Frame on Another World? What was the casting story there? I think the character was created for you. Is that right?
Yeah, but it came about in a weird way. I remember, I was doing a lot more out in LA. I was doing all these independent movies. I would shoot all night. We'd shoot all day. I did horror movies. I did Piranha. I did Mirror Mirror with Karen Black. Lance Henriksen from all the Alien movies was my dad in this other movie James Cameron directed. I mean, these were not set out to be flops. You know, nobody sets out to make a bad movie. But I'd come home every afternoon and Beau and Hope would be on my TV. And I thought, that's unbelievable how much dialogue these guys have. I started becoming a fan of the show. And just for sort of an acting lesson, like, how are they doing this much dialogue every day? And then I thought, you know, I'm going to be honest, I came from kind of a broken home, and I liked security. Like, I liked the idea of, I didn't love going from job to job to job. And I thought, well, that'd be pretty cool. This guy, they've been on there for so all year. I watched this out there, and they're on every day. And if that's pretty cool. I actually called my agents and said, you know, what are these soaps all about? And then they said, that's so funny because this is audition, but it's back in New York. It's called Another World. I'm like, what's that? And they said, it's actually one of the better shows because they really concentrate on, you know, they really concentrate on the acting. And it's turned out it was a really nice show. I loved that show. So I went back to New York. I auditioned for it. I had no idea really what I was doing, to be honest. And I knew that dialogue back and forth and forth and back. And, you know, I did whatever, and I didn't get that role. But when I was walking out of the door for that audition, the head writer, it was Donna Swijewski at the time, said, do you play an instrument? And I said, no, she goes, do you play the guitar? I said, I don't, I'm sorry. And I started to leave, and I did turn around at the door. I go, but I play the piano, the keyboards. And so I didn't hear from them for a month. And I thought, well, whatever. We're used to that rejection. 99% of the business is you just got to grow a thick skin. And then I got a call, and they said, they want to do this thing with you. They were thinking, you know, would you come on and we'll create this character call? And there was a different name for a rock star, a kid that becomes a rock star in the show if you play the piano. And so we met up one more time, and it really became a thing. It was one of the greatest things that ever happened to me. Because especially at that time, you know, our audiences back then, guys, were like 13 million people watching those. And nighttime shows were getting like 33 million people watching, you know. So, mm-hmm. But still 13, 14, 15 million people. And those were the lower rated shows. And they were like 9, 10 million, then 7, 8 million. Now they're like 1 to 2 million. And we get it. There's just more channels and more ways to watch everything. But it was definitely one of the greatest blessings I think that ever happened to me.
Mm-hmm. And really the character of Dean was like lightning in a bottle. And then, you know, Dean and Jenna were such a huge hit, and you did get to show off your musical chops. Mara and I were just talking about the unforgettable Lady Killer and Oh Jenna, which I feel both of us could sing for you right now.
Oh my God.
Like, so, Ricky, from start to finish, we could do it. We won't, but we could.
Lady Killer. Oh my God.
Hey, Ricky, pop quiz, what was in his hand?
With a rose in his hand. And a heart
for life. Oh, God, I'm so happy.
What would you say are your standout memories from your three-year run in Bay City?
Well, first of all, my screen testing for Jenna was insane. That was amazing. Remember, like, there was 25 people came in, and when A La Carte came on, I didn't have a girlfriend or anything. And when she came on, I remember going up to Michael Lapson, I believe was our executive producer. And I said, I'm begging you. I like that girl so much. Come on. Right. And he's like, and they don't listen to you. They don't really, well, they might care what you think, but really they don't care what you think. But I'm sure maybe when I left, they're like, well, you know, I mean, chemistry is chemistry. Maybe they'll have chemistry. So she did get the part. And I remember there were like some taller girls than me. And I like, yeah. And there was a kiss in the screen. You had to do a kiss in this screen test. So I, you know, worry about like getting today in this, you know, mononucleosis. Can anybody say that word? but 25 people kissing them all day long. Terrible, right? Just horrible. But I do remember like some of them were like taller than me. So I'd have to go on my tippy toes. not attractive. Not attractive.
I'm surprised that your hair didn't make up the difference. You were really like serious.
Well, Steph, if you If you realize, my hair got taller and taller and taller as the years went on that show. Yeah, you know, I actually got a permanent. I got a body wave.
It was the 90s.
Oh, goodness. It was a timeless look, really. So, like, who were your buddies on that show, Ricky, like in the cast? Who were you close with?
Well, Ala was my best friend. I loved her. I mean, we were, you know, and also we hated each other. So we loved each other and we hated each other, you know, but we were all, it was very fiery and she was a blast. And Matt Crane, I loved Matt. He was, you know, didn't he become a
sculptor.
What did he do, Stephanie? Became a sculptor.
Yeah, sculptor. Yeah.
But then again, no. Yeah, he became a sculptor. and, you know, he was always kind of, you know, he was a, you know, do you know that when I met him, you're not going to believe this, or maybe you know this, but he used to live in an abandoned building. And I'm like, dude, you're a soap star. And he'd live in this abandoned building. He'd come in, he'd wear the same pair of jeans for a month. And he put all of his money into motocross and motorcycles. And I just thought, wow, what an interesting guy, right? He was just such an interesting character in real life.
They are.
And then he met that great girl. Are they still married, Steph? Didn't he marry?
Still married. I just saw them at Linda Dano's house at Christmas.
Oh my God.
They have like two teenagers. It's amazing who look, you know, like each of them.
And is Matt just as handsome as ever? He was a handsome kid.
Yes. He and Robin are both still fantastic looking and so sweet.
Is Robin on a show?
No. They're neither one is in the business.
Good for them. Yeah. He was a really good guy. And actually, Paul Michael Valley was a trip. I remember he burned his dressing room down once by accident with some candles. That was kind of funny. And the last time I ran into him, he was a blackjack dealer in Las Vegas.
Oh, wow.
Paul Michael Valley was a trip. Shaved his head. He wasn't going insane. He was just going bald. So he shaved his head, which happens to, you know, the best of us. Although I still have a lot of hair, but he was a sweet guy. And Linda Dana was one of my best friends in the world. And I love her dearly. I talked to Linda about 3 months ago, but we, you know, I just adored her. She was so good to me back then. And she was Linda Dano, you know, I mean, she was like our Susan Lucci.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Totally.
And yeah. So, and Steven Schnitzer, he was a trip. He was my uncle on the show. Loved that guy. Vicky Windham never talked to me ever.
So, did you try to talk to her?
Rachel. No, she just wasn't having it. She had no time for me. because I was a punk. I was a punk running around the hallways, you know, with stupid long hair and earrings and cut off gloves. You know, I was really living in the moment. I had the cut off, Steph. I would wear the cut off finger gloves inside the building all day long.
I told Mara that I was there when you filmed Lady Killer, which I feel like you definitely had some cut off gloves in that.
Oh my God. It was terrible. I had a bodysuit. I had a bodysuit on for the day.
It's a delight. You really should go on YouTube if you haven't looked at it recently.
And Ricky, when you do, please explain. You literally sing the beginning of the song and then the band sings the rest of the song. I don't think it was a great first single for Dean. I don't think it showed him.
Oh, it's a terrible idea. The whole thing. No, I sang the whole song. And that's right, because you're so right. You're amazing that you know that. I sang the whole song. They had me singing in the studio. I don't know how they had so much money back then, but I was singing like twice a week in the studio. I had my keyboards. I had all this. They gave me all this cool equipment. I was singing. I'd sing live on the show. I mean, I wasn't that great or singer or anything, but you know, they would tape it live to tape, and that was like making it on the air national. Like, wow, how did this guy get this job? But I will tell you, I did sing that whole song, and then in the mix, they just had the band take over. They fell in love with that band, Rascal, I think was the name of the band, and she was an amazing singer. That girl, like, she should have become a star. She was like a little Pat Benatar or some, like, you know, crazy rock and roll singer. And then they got all caught up in the music video part. And I mean, it was a bit, you know, back then they had it on the Jumbotron in Times Square. They shut off streets so we could run through the streets, Dean and Jenna, to look at it on the Jumbotron. It was like we had all the trailers, like we were doing, you know, Mission Impossible 6 or something. It was, you know, but I don't know why they did that stuff. Maybe I didn't hit the high notes well enough. I don't remember.
But that is really like some pretty heady stuff for your first job, you know, or your first soap job, I mean.
Oh, it was incredible. I used to sleep in my dressing room sometimes because we were working so much, you know. I remember Alice Barrett. Was that right? Alice Barrett played my auntie. And she'd always come in to the makeup. She goes, "How are you on the show so much?" I go, I said, "What? What did you say?" She goes, "You're on like all the time." I'm like, "Well, whenever I'm on, you're mostly on with me too. What do you mean? Like, what do you?" I said, "I'm getting paid a nickel, you know, and you're getting paid." I mean, they're probably just. It was funny because so you'd have some of that stuff in the cast sometimes, but for the most part, everybody was really very loving on that show.
That's awesome. Well, why did you ultimately decide to leave?
Yeah, well, because Tommy Tune used to watch that show. He's a big Broadway performer and producer, and he picked me to do Grease on Broadway from that show, which that's why I say that's one of the biggest blessings of my life. So Tommy Tune and Jeff Calhoun picked me from that show to star in Grease, and everybody in the world wanted to star in Grease. I think that by then my hair had the John Travolta hair look thing going on, and I was able to do a good, I was like, you know, "Sandy, there must be two of us or something." you know? I do not know. And so I just had a great, and by the way, on that one, I mean, everybody in the world wanted that. John Stamos wanted it. And John Stamos was always getting every role that I wanted. It used to make me so angry because he was on a bigger show and he had better songs. He had better hair, better clothes, and John. And then, you know, Full House came out. He got that. You know, Steph, I never told you. It was like between me and three guys, and Stamos got it. I'm like, what? So
could have been Uncle Jesse.
Yeah. So, you know, but I got, he wanted, nobody got, I was so lucky. And one of the little things I did on that show was, I got to thank my mom for this back in those days. I had a big audition in New York, and by the way, when I did the scene with Sandy, and she slams the door on the car, and it like gets Zuko, it hurts him, you know. And so when I did it in my audition, I instead of going "Oh!" like that, I went "Ivy," and I remember hearing Jeff Calhoun whisper to Tommy Tune in the audience. They were just the only ones in the audience with some stage directors or whatever, stage managers. And they go, "Great, we're going to hire the first Jewish Danny Zuko," which they did. And but thanks to my mom, I just remember that they said, "Well, our producers are going to be." They called my manager and said, "You know, the Weislers were the producers, and the other producer, the wife, Barry and Fran Weisler. Fran was going to be in L.A. next week." And I just said to my manager, "That's so funny. I'm going to be in L.A. next week." And they said, "Oh, you are?" And I said, "Yeah." And they said, "Okay, well, maybe you can meet her too." So I wasn't going to be in L.A., guys. I just made that up. I'm like 26 years old, 20, whatever I was. And so I got on a plane and I rented a hotel room there. Thank God for Dean Frame, because I had a couple of shekels in my pocket, and I rented a piano and I had it brought to my hotel room, and I sang. Wow. And I hired a singing coach. I got the best coach in LA, which took all my money, but he'd come every day, and I'd sing him for 5-6 hours a day, all the book from Grease over and over and over. And then a couple of Beatles songs that kind of sounded like that, so I'd have some diversity if they asked me. And I went to the ballroom of the Beverly Hills Hotel, where we snuck in there, and I sang for Fran Weisler. And I definitely wasn't the biggest or best singer. No way. There's no, because I'm an actor who can sing. I was not a singer who could act. And I got down. I had a leather jacket. My hair was already big. I had my Dean Frame clothes in my suitcase. I wore that to the Beverly Hills Hotel. And to be honest, like, I was down to no money at that then. And I remember I didn't have enough money to get my car out of the valet parking. And and Fran Weistler came out behind me. And I got in the ballroom. I got down on my knees and I sang "Oh Darling" from "Oh Darling, Please Believe Me." And so, I'm sure I embarrassed myself, but I had. She turned red. You know, she was like my mom, like, you know, my mom's age, and she was really, it was really cute. But when she came out to the valet, I didn't have the money. She saw me like patting down my pockets looking for the money. She goes, "I got his ticket. Let me take care of that. I think I'm going to be seeing a lot of you."
Aww.
And that was an amazing thing to be told. Right. So I went home and I'm almost done. I went home the next week. I was at Radio City Music Hall with A La Carat at the Tina Turner concert at Radio City Music Hall. And I had a cell phone by then. My Motorola was ringing in my pocket with no, so I couldn't like, what? I can't hear you. It was my agent. And I ran down, there was a payphone in the lobby and it was in the lobby of Radio City Music Hall on the payphone where she's like, you got the part of Danny Zuko on Broadway. Do you understand? And I hear Tina Turner singing, like, you know, singing so loud through the whole building. I couldn't really hear, but I got it. That's where I found out I got the part. So another amazing moment in my life. Really lucky.
Yeah. My God.
How awesome. So amazing. Now, there's this whole other like part of your career that's so interesting because you were really ahead of the reality show curve, kind of in the same time frame. And in 1993, you produced and hosted Street Match.
Yeah.
You've got to tell us about that and about kind of paving the way for the programming that we see all over the place now.
I know. And Street Match was a little dating show. It was just a reality show. We made the New York Times. We're in the cover of Arts and Leisure. And it was just introducing strangers on the street to see if they'd get along. A love at first sight kind of feeling. We were off. We did a whole season on ABC between Home Improvement and Wonder Years. And we made that pilot for $1,500. At the flea market at up on 77th Street in Columbus in New York City, if anybody knows it. And we just ran some cameras and I hosted it. And we were shocked that ABC wanted the show. We did it. And back in those days, like, there was a lot of money per episode that you got. And they wanted us to do something called strip the show out as a syndicated show. I'm like, what does that mean? That means you put on the show 5 days a week. I'm like, what? 5 days a week? We're not doing that. We'll do it like once a week. Well, we were morons because they just took Street Match and pop-up videos and they created a show called Blind Date, and the rest is history. Like, Blind Date took off. It basically was a Street Match type show. And we made a lot of other, I made a lot of other shows after that, but yeah, you know, that was definitely one of the first reality shows. And I got to do it in the daytime. I mean, I got to do it because I was doing a soap and you know, you could make time in a soap to do something else if you stayed locally in New York or whatever. Like Grease. I started Grease at the same, I was doing Grease at night time and Street Match was on in prime time and Another World was on in daytime. So I was hitting, you know, I was batting 1,000 right at that one little time. But then I had to leave Another World to be able to do Grease across the Rosie O'Donnell and Billy Porter, myself and some of the, I'm just great people. We had to tour it across America and bring it into Broadway that way to work out the kinks. That's what they wanted. So I had to ask to leave the show. And that's how I left.
Now, you did return to daytime in 1999 as Gary on Young and the Restless, who was a bad guy. Tell us about your Y&R experience.
I knew that Y&R was the number one show. And I'm like, well, I'd like to be a number one instead of number, like, whatever Another World was, the last
11
one.
11 or whatever.
Yeah, we were always the bottom of the barrel. So, but it's like, you know, if you're working on Another World or you're working on Steven Spielberg movie, you're not going to be a different person when you shoot. It's who you are. You're going to bring what you bring. So, you know, it's just the luck of the draw. And when I heard, when I was driving around in California, I'm an out-of-work actor at that point, and my manager called and said, they want to do this guest spot on Young and the Restless, And I brought up your name and they said, well, if Ricky would do it, I'm not bragging, guys. It's just, I was just very lucky that if he would do it, well, maybe we would do it longer. And so it started as a 12-week gig and ended up, Steph, you probably know better than me, it was like 2.5 years, something like that. Something like that. Because I got to work with Heather Tom and it became her love interest. But Young and the Restless was incredibly smart. What they used to do was, and I'm sure they still do it, they bring in somebody that's the bad guy, and then everybody in town who's fighting on that, you know, on the TV show, in the fictitious world, of course, they all have to band together one way or the other to take care of this evil. That's like an ongoing trick that you can use in daytime. And then I didn't know I was going to be the bad guy, to be honest, that bad a guy. And I was definitely deranged. And I just got so they signed me to a 3-year deal, but it lasted 2.5 years because they had to kill Gary Dawson or get rid of him. They had to put him in prison. Mm-hmm. I'm still in prison. Gary Dawson is still there rotting away.
Free Gary.
You know what? Same fate that befell John Stamos's character on General Hospital. So there you go again. Another similarity.
Did they really? They just brought, really?
Yeah. Blackie's still in prison too.
And for a lot longer.
Did they talk? Is he back on? Not him, but there's an actor playing Blackie, or they talk about Blackie?
No, yeah. Blackie's still in jail.
They don't even talk about Blackie. Still in jail.
Just rotting away. Totally.
Oh, wow. Well, when I left Another World, Dean Frame went on a world tour. I've been on a world tour for, I don't know now, 20 years?
best world tour ever.
Yeah. Now totally. It's just like taverns and crappy bars. It's not much of a tour.
I thought I saw him playing my lobby last week.
In Vegas, not on the main stage, just like in the lounge.
Totally.
He's like, he's singing Lady Killer with a cigarette. Lady Killer. Come on, if you know the words, nobody knows the words except the one drunk guy.
And Steph and me.
and you got comp tickets. You got the comp tickets.
Oh, that's so hilarious. Oh my goodness.
You got to laugh. We got to laugh.
So the following year that you wrapped up at Young and the Restless, you took on another extremely popular role in daytime, Gus Itoro on Guiding Light, which was your longest running role in soaps. So how did that job come about?
Yeah, well, I don't remember the exact phone call that I got, but I remember that an audition came up and they were saying it is a show. You know, I just lived in LA then for 3 years. When I landed, that's when I got Young and the Restless. And now, like, it was going up, it's coming up to the 3-year mark on with Young and the Restless. And then I set up my house and my apartment or whatever. And then my agents called, said, there's another soap that is interested in if you would come to New York. It shoots back in New York, Guiding Light. And I had just, Young and the Restless was the number one show. And I looked up Guiding Light, it's like the number 99th show, you know, even though there was only 11 shows, that was weird, but it was the lowest rated. It was like one of the lower rated shows, but I did turn it on and I loved the style of the actors and it just had I liked it. So I was lucky enough to get that request, to go and audition. And I auditioned for Paul Roush, who was, a very colorful executive producer. He's gone now, but he was very well known, and I think very well respected in the business. And so I did the audition for him in his big office. And I remember when I was like a 13-page scene, and every time I finished a page, I flicked it out of my hand, and it landed on the floor. And I walked around in a big circle. And I sat up on the couch that was in his, I sat up on the arm of his couch when I finished, because I was playing it a little bit cocky, I guess. And I did the scene and he was silent. And like the other two people that were in the room, I guess producers were silent too. And he goes, all right, are you done? And I go, yeah, that's the scene. And he goes, okay. Can you clean all this shit up, please? So I was like, I got red faced like a tomato, you know, I was embarrassed. And I'm like crawling around now on the floor, picking up the pages of the script all over the office like an idiot. And he goes, no, that's good. And he actually said to me, are you ready to be back on daytime? And I said, I would never have gotten on a plane, sir, and come here to meet you. And so that wasn't it. I said, that was cool. It was a great sign. I went back to L.A. And then they called and said, okay, we want to do a screen test. I'm like, oh, this is great. Piece of cake, you know. But when I walked back in to that studio a couple weeks later for the screen test, there were like 20 other potential Gus Ituros sitting all over the place, you know, waiting. They also got their screen test. Like, this is that's when it feels terrible as an actor. You know, all your insecurities start coming up inside you, and you're like, am I good enough for this role? Is this role me? Look at that guy. He's like 7 foot tall. You know, look at that guy. You know, wow, that guy's a handsome, studly dude. You know, look, that guy's blonde-eyed, you know, blonde hair, blue-eyed, total different opposite than me. But when I got in the, you know, Beth Ehlers was just like ripping through people, you know, scene after scene with these screen tests. And when I got on there, I don't know, she'd hardly look up at people. But I remember stepping out in that set and she was just not engaged. And I said, are you going to look at me in the role, in the character as Gus? I said, are you going to look at me or what? And because, you know, the scene, and she like, whoa, who's this guy? I don't know. She like either hated me a lot at that moment, but at least I had her attention, you know? And that's what you had to do with somebody who was, you know, she's a powerful actor, Beth Ehlers, you know?
Well, speaking of Beth Ehlers, Gus and Harley were one of the most successful pairings in the aughts on Guiding Light. So tell us, first of all, about working with her and creating that couple and that dynamic.
Yeah. Well, she, is a spitfire. You know, she was always a full throttle kind of actor. So you had to be prepared when you were working with Beth Ehlers. And it just sort of became like, out talking each other. It became like a moonlighting. If you remember that show,
of course.
It became where we could, I think it started with her, like basically helping me, finish my sentences because I never really memorized everything. I didn't like the idea of having it perfect, but Beth knew every word, everybody's word. She, you know, she knew all my dialogue and her dialogue and everybody else in the room's dialogue. And all I could say is, I don't know how many years later, but we were at the Emmys. And again, we were kind of used to being ignored because it was, you know, it wasn't one of the highest rated shows. But there we were at the Emmys and we won this. I don't remember the category. It was
irresistible combination, I believe it was.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they don't even have that category anymore because it's such a wacky category. But you never saw two people more shocked in their lives because we didn't even know basically that we'd, you know, have a shot in hell. We just would have a really good time when we worked together. And I think we went up there and I think Beth actually, we were just, all of a sudden we were just audience members like the other actors and at the Emmys. And the next thing you know, we're on the stage at Radio City Music Hall. Pretty sure it was at Radio City Music Hall or, you know, so they did it in Kodak Theater a lot in LA and Radio City Music Hall. It was Radio City. And you know, we're doing our acceptance speech. And Beth is like, I'm just speechless. She said, we're just doing our shtick. And there were many times that she reminded me of like Lucy Ball, with her, more of the stuff behind the scenes at the show. And I just got the biggest kick out of her. And I think more than anything, I respected her as an actor. And I really felt challenged by her at all the time. I was always trying to keep up with her as opposed to dragging somebody along with me, mm-hmm. You know? So I think that's what made it the most fulfilling for me.
It's what made it the most irresistible combination.
I think for everybody else.
Uh-huh. So your Guiding Light run came to an end in 2008 and you super quickly hopped over to All My Children. I feel like it was like a matter of weeks. And there you played Jake Martin through to the end of the show in 2011. So tell us how that unfolded, you leaving Guiding Light and getting snapped up to go over to Pine Valley.
Well, Guiding Light was not the same show at the end. You know, they were running out of the budgets were getting lower and lower, and we were shooting on location a lot in a little town called Peapack, New Jersey. I believe it was New Jersey. I could be wrong about.
No, you're right. That's it.
Jersey, but okay. But it just didn't feel the same. And quite honestly, I had a meeting with All My Children before I left Guiding Light. With ABC. And what's funny is we talked about it at the time with the head of the ABC programming at the time. And he's like, well, what show would you rather do? General Hospital or All My Children? And, you know, I was a Guiding Light fan, so I didn't really know the shows that well, those other shows. I mean, I knew the actors, a lot of us were friends, but I just picked All My Children because it was New York, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep.
Maybe I should have picked General Hospital. I'd still be on there. And in any event, I did All My Children, and then a shocker, a few years later, they called us all together to say the show is moving to L.A. So one way or the other, I ended up back in L.A. And it was great. I knew Michael Knight was in All My Children also, and I loved him as an actor. And when they told me that it was his brother, I'm like, I'm all in. You know, where do I sign?
Mm-hmm. Well, what stands out to you about working with Michael and playing brothers? Mm.
Well, again, he's another one of these geniuses that can memorize things with just like snapping his eyes open and closed, and he's got the page memorized. And we didn't rehearse a whole hell of a lot, but we would also have this sort of repartee that I was missing in my acting life that I used to have with Beth, you know? And so he and I just became these two, and he would let me, it was kind of a, you know, we weren't as good as a Jerry Lewis and a Dean Martin, but it had that kind of quick going back and forth. And he didn't mind playing the straight man, letting me be like a banana peel, just, you know, slipping all and sliding all over the place. And he was a very gracious actor, a very giving actor. And we just loved each other.
So on All My Children, I mean, we can't talk about All My Children without talking a little bit about Susan Lucci. So I want to hear what comes to mind when you think of the grand dame of All My Children, Susan Lucci, who, of course, played Erica.
Susan Lucci is everything that everybody ever thought she was. She is the all-time reigning queen of daytime, and I was nervous to meet her. I mean, there can only be one. And she's it. And the only way I could ingratiate myself to her, I felt, was anytime I'd see her, I'd say, oh my God, it's Susan Lucci, right to Susan Lucci. And I would bend, the knee, and I'd bow to her and I'd say, our queen. And I'd bend all the way down, and she'd like, Ricky Paul. Oh, Ricky Paul. She'd always say my full name, Ricky, my full first name. Ricky Paul, Ricky Paul, Ricky Paul. And the one little thing I can remember, one of it's a million great things with Susan. But you know, my Greta has shops and stores and salons, boutiques, and she sells one of the things in the boutique she sells is shoes. Greta Monahan, her store Greta Lux, sells beautiful high end shoes. And if anybody knows Susan. Susan Lucci loves shoes. And she also has a size 6.5 foot. Okay, I know this because I became her personal shoe valet. Because I once said to Susan, be it a good thing that I did it or not, I said, Susan, you know, Greta can get you an amazing deal on shoes or these beautiful, I mean, the kind of shoes that Susan likes there. It's not a joke. And so I said, no, Susan, we can send you over like 20 pairs of shoes from Greta's store, and you can try on every shoe you want to, and you can send back whatever you don't want and keep the ones that you do like. It's like, yes, Ricky Paul, that's what I'm going to do. Send all the shoes to my dressing room. Now I became Susan's shoe guy, or her shoe boy, because I was bringing in the boxes, loading them into her dressing room. She would try them on. It's like, Ricky Paul, what do you think of the white ones? Or maybe
what do you think of the gold ones? And I'm like, well, I think every girl should have the white ones, Susan. I mean, they go with everything, basically. They go with jeans. They go with evening wear. I said, but what are we talking about here? You're Susan Lucci. You can have both. You can have all these shoes, Susan Lucci. And she's like, that's what I am going to do, Ricky Paul. I'm going to have them all. And you're going to call Helmut and ask him for his American Express card. And so I love her to death. I love her. We still text each other. We've gone on some double dates, her and Helmut and myself and Greta. And we've had double dates in New York, double dates in St. Bart's. She is one of a kind and a beautiful soul.
Oh, that's amazing. And now you're back in the new season of Beacon Hill. It just dropped today. It is available for streaming. So tell us about season two and working on that.
Well, I got together with Crystal Chappelle, who's an amazing actor, but she's, you know, we're a lot in common. She loves to produce. She loves the whole process. So if you're not always in front of the camera, it's great to be behind the camera. It's great to create no matter what you're doing. In Beacon Hill, we got to do both roles in the same series. So she's in the show, of course, and she's one of the creators. I got the pleasure of producing with her on this. It took a long time to bring season two back, but you know, in the digital world that we live in now, it's very forgiving. Nobody is, you know, if they like those people or like the story or like the actors or, you know, any combination thereof, they're liable to turn the show on, and that's great. I was thrilled to come back. I can't wait for this season to drop. I mean, for people to see it and us to get rolling into a third season. It's a political saga drama, and I love those. I haven't gotten to do many of those. And this guy is such a bad egg, such a bad guy. But I love playing bad guys so much that I give you an example. If anybody ever saw House of Cards with Frank Underwood, played by Kevin Spacey, say whatever you want about Kevin Spacey, but he is an amazing actor. And he made you hate that guy that he played, Frank Underwood, the president of the United States, and how he became the president of the United States. It's so disgusting of a character, but you can't keep your eyes off him. And that's what I would love to be able to do with this character, Andrew, because this guy will stop at nothing and at nothing to get ahead in the political world. So it should be fun to watch him. That's why I want there to be a season three and a season four.
Well, here's hoping.
So I know you're a busy guy and I know that you're ensconced in your New York life, but would you be open to doing another soap? Like, you've been on YNR and you've been on B&B, but now you've got both Michael E. Knight and one of your real life besties, James Patrick Stewart, on General Hospital. And I think it would be really fun to see you in scenes with the both of them.
You know what? In a heartbeat. I haven't been asked that question in a while, and we have amazing things going on in New York. I'm very lucky. We have a production company that keeps our doors have been open now for about 6 or 7 years. We've got great deals going on, but in a heartbeat to be with those guys, to go. I love Maurice. I love Steve Burton. You know, but I know there's a lot of male energy on that show, but I'd love to come in anytime and play with those guys because they're all really the best in the business. And Frank, who runs that show, does such a stellar job. So did you guys call me to give me any kind of news? Is that what this is? Is this like Ashton Kutcher and Punk? Come on out, Ashton. Come on out. What's going on?
We have some news for you.
Frank thought it would be fun if we pretended to a podcast. But really.
That'd be funny is Michael Knight's doing a Southern accent on there. I'll just go on there and be like, right, hello, hello, hello. Who are you then? Right, it's nice to meet you. And I'll be British. And then, by the way, Pat... And then we just mess everybody's head up. He's doing a great job. I would be with those guys any day of the week. I don't know what I'd have to break the news to my family that we all are moving back to California. But the 2-year-old is always so unhappy anyway. He's always crying all day. I mean, it can only go up from here.
Well, we hope so. And we would love to see you back in daytime, of course. And we thank you so much for joining us and for giving us all the time you have. It's very
You guys are the best. You know, I'll just say, take my hat off to you guys for keeping the stories going and doing what you do with this show, because it's giving there's a very loyal fan base. Nobody knows this better than you to all of daytime. The most loyal I've ever seen. I've had friends on every kind of show, nighttime, primetime, anything, daytime, you know, internet, Netflix. This audience still is there for the fans, and I call them friends and family, but they're fans of the show. So you guys are doing those fans and those friends and family an amazing service. So thank you for that.
You're sweet. Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Wonderful. It was so great to talk to you.
Same here. Anytime, guys. Anytime. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you to Ricky Paul Golden for being our guest. If you like this podcast, we're on Spotify, so listen on Spotify. Be sure to pick up a new issue on sale now and come back next week for another podcast.
How powerful is Cox Internet? Powerful enough to let your band members in Vegas, Phoenix, and Rhode Island jam like you're all in the same garage. Get gig speeds powered by fiber from Cox. It's internet built for tomorrow, today. Cox, always building better. Download speeds up to 1 gigabit per second. Cox Internet is connected to the premises via coaxial connection. Speeds vary and are not guaranteed. Cox terms and other restrictions may apply.